From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We are joined, as always, with our super producer, Seth Nicholas The Shadow Johnson. Most importantly, you are here, and that makes this Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. It's good to be king, as Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers said. It's also terrible for your health, because heavy weighs the head that wears the crown. And the thing about being a very important person in the world of politics or governance is that often, well, historically speaking, retirement can be a really risky endeavor. You know, I know that we've got a lot of folks in the audience today who have either been in a career that doesn't always end peacefully, or know someone who has been in a very dangerous job. You know what I mean? It's almost hilarious that there's not a, you know how Discovery Channel used to have that Dangerous Jobs show, and they would look at ice road truckers and lobster fisheries and stuff.
I think so. I more remember the Dirty Jobs one, but I think I know what you're talking about.
I was construing those as well. I was thinking like the person that has to clean out the septic tanks. But that's dangerous too. You could drown in poop.
That's true. Yeah, and their entire like social caste systems that like curse people to have to do that work because everyone hates it. Well, dangerous jobs. To me, it's funny that there's not an episode of how dangerous it is to be a head of state as a job. Like it's a really dangerous thing, regardless of whether you agree with or disagree with the given person in power. And today's show is a follow-up on a strange news segment we did earlier. We have to work this in somewhere, so let's just say it at the top. Putin on the Ritz.
Putin on the Ritz. Well, you know, it's a really great point, Ben, that you make. And we've talked about this a little bit before, the concept that a lot of countries, within their constitutions, within the laws of their land, they protect standing government officials, specifically those who would be in an executive position, the ones who have to sign the thing at the end, who decide this is where our troops are going to go, or this is, you know, the thing that is potentially a war crime, internationally speaking, or humanitarily speaking. The countries will protect that person by saying they are immune to prosecution for those types of crimes while they're in office, while they're hanging out, still making decisions. And today's episode is about how long should those protections really last?
Yeah. And how deep should they go? I mean,
what about forever and really deep?
And it makes sense to have that kind of limited immunity, not just for the international stuff. This is an important point. Like, imagine you're the president or prime minister of a country and someone is adversely affected by a policy that you put into law. Right. And so if you did not have immunity, then it is possible that someone who was, say, who lost a loved one or had a debilitating injury due to what they see as your healthcare policy, it would be possible for them to sue you for some kind of criminal act. Maybe, but you can't do it. And honestly, you shouldn't be able to do that because it would make it impossible for people at the executive level to do their job. Today's episode is about, As you said, Noel, how far can this actually go? Here are the facts. Recent news from Russia, in case you missed our strange news segment. Earlier in November, some very, very strange reports hit the press. The Russian government is, as we record today, considering a bill that would grant all ex-presidents of Russia lifetime immunity from criminal prosecution. For anything, not just stuff they did while they were in office, for anything like they do afterwards. Under current law, like many other countries, Russian presidents, I keep saying Russian presidents because it's written like it's not written for this one guy, right?
It's just two, though, right?
There are two.
There's one other, yeah.
Mm-hmm. There are two, you're right. Under Russian law, currently, these presidents cannot be held liable for crimes they committed, as you said, Matt, while serving their terms. But this new proposal is very different.
Yeah, and there's a senator that we may be referring to a few times in this episode, and forgive me for brutalizing it, Senator Andrei Klishas?
I think it's pronounced Cletus.
Really?
I'm kidding. I have no idea.
Man. Oh, okay.
I think you're doing a fine job.
Okay.
He just strikes me as a bit of a Cletus.
Well, this person is the co-chair of the Federation Council's Committee on Constitutional Legislation and State Building.
Sexy name.
It feels good. Feels good. This is the parliamentary working group that created this whole concept, this proposal that would become a law if the bill is signed. You know, you remember the song, it's just a bill right now. It's only a bill. It's going to Duma Hill, I guess. But this is the co-chair of the group that created this bill. And this is a quote from Andrei Klishas. This expands the time frame of immunity guarantees for a president who stops exercising their powers. I mean, it's just right there on the page, right? It's exactly what it is. This is as soon as the president is done, they are still immune from getting in trouble administratively or legally for all the things they've done.
No take backsies for anything.
Could you go in the middle of Times Square and shoot somebody, for example?
So there is a mechanism to make this seem a little bit less dystopian, and that mechanism is the following. If, again, some Russian president, any Russian president, if any Russian president happens to be accused of some felonies, mainly high treason, then the Russian parliament can vote. If both sides of Russia, the lower and the upper part of the Russian parliament, agree, they can vote on whether to remove this immunity. And if they get a 2/3 vote in favor, then they can remove the immunity and prosecute for that specific set of crimes. But like, if your thing is, as an ex-president, is just like shoplifting, you're golden. Nobody's going to do anything. As a matter of fact, why would you even bother paying for stuff?
And I don't want to jump too far ahead here, guys, but this concept that you would need 2/3 of a majority of the parliament to agree that, yes, we need to prosecute or we need to remove immunity for this, you would need 2/3 of that parliament to not support said president, whoever this president might be in the future. And, you know, as we know right now, the parliament of Russia supports the current president, the one who's been around, well, I don't know how many, what, 20 years in power, roughly?
President since 1999, 2000.
Yeah. Give or take a 4-year stint where he was slightly not president.
Right. What a great way to describe it. Yeah, you're absolutely right. There's also something else. So just for the record, on the pro side here, a guy named Pavel Krashininikov is one of the bill's authors also. He says that the aim is to give, again, anybody who happens to have been president of Russia guarantees that are important for the stability of the state and society. But think about this 2/3 vote, okay? Here's why this was such an excellent question. Who are the people voting? Some of them are going to be senators. And about a week before this wild-ass immunity bill comes into play, President Vladimir Putin submitted another bill that allows presidents to appoint senators for life and also makes it super easy for, again, just any ex-president of Russia, just in general, just whomever you think of when you think of that term, allows those individuals to automatically hold lifetime Senate seats.
Yeah.
Pretty neat. Pretty way to like pre-pack, you know?
And isn't, I mean, like there are a hand, like, Russia has an interesting system of government in that they have quite a few registered parties. There's the United Russia Party, Communist Party, Liberal Democratic Party, A Just Russia Party, Rodina, and Civic Platform Party. But of those, Putin's United Russia Party has by far the most amount of power.
Which makes sense. I mean, that's probably the party where you have the lowest odds of accidentally running into polonium or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Keeps the KGB off your back if you're for uniting Russia.
Right.
And just to clarify, they have 335 seats of the 450 in the state Duma.
Wow. So, yeah, that's huge. Yeah. So here's the thing. When we say senators, it's roughly analogous to what you might think of when you think of a senator in, say, the United States. But it's a little bit different because, as you said, Noel, it doesn't have the same, you know, functional duopoly that we have here in the U.S. with Democrats and Republicans. You know, our system has been purposely designed by those parties to repress third party candidates, and it's not the same deal in Russia. Also, senators, representatives of the Russian Federation, are appointed for 6 years, or the president can just appoint them for life by saying it happens. Think it's almost like an executive order. If a bill like this passed in the U.S., then the president of the U.S., whomever they were at the time, could just decide to make someone a senator. You know what I mean?
Bing!
Bing! What's it like at the top? The president of Russia, under this new bill, can do this, and it's a presidential prerogative, not a duty. So it means that they don't have to do it, but they can also do it whenever they want. 7 times. They baked in a number, which makes me wonder what the calculation is, right? Was it like, okay, first off, I should be immune forever unless there's, I don't know, treason or something. And then 2/3 of the Senate has to vote for that. Also, by the way, I can make 7 people lifetime senators. And myself.
Hey, we got 8. We got 8 of us hanging out in the Senate. That is very, very odd, man.
This is the kind of laughter you get when I'm just intensely uncomfortable. None of this is funny at all. This is all very scary. And clearly something that certain individuals would love to see happen, you know, in this neck of those. I think we've perhaps stemmed the tide of that a little bit. But gosh, knowing what's possible, right? I mean, this level of power goes a long way.
Well, there are some requirements. Like, this is, we're already in crazy territory, in my opinion, but it does get crazier. So there are some constraints or restrictions on who can become a lifetime senator. As you might imagine, dear conspiracy realist, the four of us are out of the game. Like, the four of us on the show today cannot be lifetime Russian senators. You have to, the main thing that you need to prove to get one of these sort of rubber stamp positions is that you have never lived somewhere else and you've never associated with another country. So it gives you a sense of where the priorities are.
And, a little inward facing. That's okay.
Yeah.
Well, sure.
Takes a lot, you know, it takes a village. So for comparison, this is also not a total wild hair. In Italy, there's a similar system. All former presidents are given the title of senator for life. But just so we know, the thing about this is this immunity bill is occurring in a context that isn't being explored fully in a lot of other outlets. So if we go back to this new proposal, it tells us a couple of interesting things. We have to ask ourselves about presidents and crime, because, you know, we've been talking about this a little bit just a few minutes ago, but proponents of this bill say, look, we're not doing anything weird. This is how the world works. Maybe we're just getting victimized by a propaganda spin because some people don't like Russia, and that's unfair. It's true to a degree. This bill is in line with international norms, but And it's all for the reasons we discussed. You know, you can't, we don't, people won't be able to do their job as president or prime minister or whatever if they are bound by the law, as weird as that sounds, on that personal level. But this lifetime immunity is way different. If Vladimir Putin, for some reason, quits the presidency or loses the 2024 election and becomes ex-president or a senator and decides to get really into one of our favorite crimes, stamp fraud, then there's nothing to be done. He can just make all the stamps. But this is the weirdest part of this. This is the thing that people weren't talking about a lot in the news. The immunity, when we say it works outside of your time in office, that timeline goes both ways. So think about this. If this passes, then just any Russian president is immune from prosecution for stuff they did before they were ever president. And we're talking about a former KGB agent.
Exactly. Somebody who is getting his hands dirty well before he got that seat of power. Man.
Wait, you don't mean Putin himself, do you? As though he'd been doing shady things like for a long time prior? That doesn't track.
Yeah, as has everyone.
The king of the shade. Fake news. We have always been at war with East Asia. We have always loved the dear leader. But think about that. That kind of get out of jail forever card. Legally, it's really impressive. I imagine you are immune from everything you have ever done ever. That's a sweet gig if you can get it.
You know what this will allow Putin to do, though, because of all this? He can't get in trouble for anything. He is going to set up full UFO extraterrestrial disclosure.
Amazing.
Because he can't get in trouble for any of it, for hiding it, for stealing the tech, for murdering all of those grays. He's just going to come out and be like, guess what, everybody? I'm a senator now, and E.T. is real. A lot of E.T.
Yes.
He's also adorable, or arguably terrifying. But okay, here's another implication here, Matt. Think about how much dirt that dude has on, like, everybody. Like, people from other countries. Like, think, you know, like, he holds the keys to the kingdom, man. Like, he could either just, like, dox all these people or, like, blackmail. I mean, he could already do that, obviously, but now he can do it with utter abandon, you know, and not even have to cover it up. I mean, it's just, you know, because, I mean, he's never going to leave Russia. This obviously doesn't apply. This doesn't apply diplomatically, certainly, right? This is only, like, within Russia and their laws, yeah?
Well, the thing is, when you get into the international sphere, the International Criminal Court is notoriously backlogged, and also it's not recognized by a lot of countries. The U.S., for instance, doesn't recognize the ICC, and one country can say, look, our guys have diplomatic immunity forever, and another country can say, no, that. We know what you did. And the end result in practice often becomes just a matter of where people can or cannot travel. Like Dick Cheney probably has countries he cannot visit, you know. And if you're a president of any country, then you have to be really careful where you go forever. It doesn't matter who you are.
But Dick Cheney was never, like, convicted of war crimes. I mean, it was bandied about, but there's nothing on paper that like, charges him as being a war criminal, even though we all know he is.
Yeah, for a time, there was a rumor that he and former President George W. Bush could not travel to Europe due to the threat of arrest. However, it looks like that's not the case. At least there's not an active warrant out. But these situations do occur and have occurred in the past. So it's a real concern for Vladimir Putin. But if he stays safe in Russia, he just has to worry about domestic enemies, you know, or some actor with the means to reach him on his home turf, which is very difficult because if you are under about 50 years old, then for the majority of your life, this has been one of the most powerful people in the world. full stop. Maybe Xi Jinping right now is I think he would be number one right now, but then Putin would be number two. So it's weird. The reaction when we talk about this, when we're talking about now, right now, the big question is, and this is a point you made me think of, Matt. The big question is, this guy's been in power for so long. Why is he just doing it now? He had decades and decades and decades. One of his opponents, a guy named Alexei Navalny, said on Twitter, he said, why does Putin need an immunity law now? Can dictators step down of their own free will? And this is the billion ruble question. I love, Matt, that you said a time when he was less president or whatever. So when he is slightly not president from 2008 to 2012, an ally and a longtime associate of his named Dmitry Medvedev, the only other living ex-Russian president, he serves one term as president. Putin, by the way, is prime minister from 2008 to 2012. Now, that is a hustle I respect, because in 2012, he comes back. He's president again. He's been president of Russia since 2012. His current term is set to expire in 2024, but they're changing the constitution to make that, you know, up for conversation. Let's just talk about it.
You guys, I feel so silly here. I could have sworn they changed the presidential term limits from 4 to 6 years, and that's why it goes from 2012 to 2024, but it was still just two terms. It's just he has more time then. I was reading a BBC article talking about six-year terms, two more six-year terms, which is just, I guess that changed at some point. I just don't have that info.
Yeah, 2008, it changed. When Medvedev was president, they said, okay, by the way, just like some Russian president in the future, we should probably give them 6 years, you know? Not me. I'm not changing the law for myself. Interesting, right? So this is still, like, without getting too in the weeds on this, this is also occurring in the wake of a recent vote that occurred this summer that would allow Vladimir Putin to extend his rule until 2036, after his current presidency ends. So he may be around for a long time, and he remains popular with a big segment of the Russian public. Not all, though. So we have to ask ourselves some more questions. We're already in crazy territory, but it's about to get even weirder. So we'll be back, assuming we don't get poisoned, after a word from our sponsor, and we'll dive deeper into this murky story.
And we're back, ready to swim in some pretty sinister waters. Gosh, where do you even pick up? There's so much to unpack here.
Well, I just want to jump really quickly to talk a little bit more about the concept that Vladimir Putin may, because of this recent vote, be able to continue being president for another 12 years. So I think it was March when I was seeing a lot of reporting on that subject, and then about like possibly doing a reset, essentially, for anyone who is going to, anyone who is going to run for president in Russia, they were going to reset everybody back to zero. Like, as in, okay, no terms have occurred for anyone in the history of Russia right now as of this point. Now, anyone can run for two terms as president. But it's the weirdest thing, because he's the only person that affected by this besides Medvedev. And it was just kind of just passed. Has it passed? I think it's passed.
Yeah, that one passed.
So that's just the situation. He can just decide to run for president again if he wants to.
It's like, I keep harping on this, but it's so gut-bustingly hilarious to me that they're writing these laws as though they are not specifically applicable to one dude. It's like if we were writing a law and I had said, you know what, I think anybody who happens to be wearing a red and black flannel shirt, just like in general, they should have free lunch.
But Ben, you know that's Putin's favorite shade. You know that's his favorite pattern.
The king of the shit.
And you know that Ben is really hungry right now, as am I. But
yeah, too. I just ordered some. Full disclosure, guys. I just ordered some Thai food that's going to come to my door as soon as we wrap this episode. But
wait, while we're recording?
What?
Yeah, you guys were on a roll. I just did it. I have it saved. No. I get the same thing every time. I get the lemongrass vermicelli and a pork banh mi and a Thai iced tea. But that's not the point, guys. The point is this. I think it's genius the calculus with which Putin operates, because he's clearly somewhat concerned with the like patina of legitimacy. Like, he doesn't want to just like slam down his iron fist and say, I am president for life. He goes through it in seemingly, you know, legal ways and by, you know, rewriting laws and passing new laws that clearly, to your point, Ben, benefit himself. But he does it like through the appropriate channels, kind of. I don't know. I think it's kind of brilliant the way he clearly is a brilliant politician.
Oh, I love it. The inside of the guy's mind must be like a cathedral, you know. Mm-hmm. So
filled with chess pieces.
Filled with chess pieces. And plans, lots of plans. So, as we said, this means that not only would he not be legally liable for anything before or after he was president, he'd also be completely fine with that period between 2008 and 2012 when he was prime minister or, you know, whatever. So now the speculation. For some people, this bill is seen as a sign that he is getting an insurance policy, kind of, that he's preparing to leave the post of the presidency as soon as early next year. But that's still all speculation. But we know he might still want to be involved in the country's politics. Why else would he do this automatic lifetime senator thing? But is there more to the story? Almost certainly. And the thing is, when we ask about this flurry of legislation, things become very, very murky very, very quickly. Here's where it gets crazy.
As if it wasn't already crazy.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's what I was saying. So we're entering the land of wild speculation. None of the things we are discussing now, from this point on, the real crazy stuff, none of it's been officially confirmed, but it is fascinating. The first one, the medical concerns, which is an entire, like an ongoing kind of genre of speculation of which I was largely unaware.
Yeah. A British paper, The Sun, cited a Russian professor by the name of Valery Solovey, who is a political pundit, who had suggested on a Moscow radio station that Putin was being pressured to step down from his first time I've done it in a while, entourage, due to his health, a failing health. Specifically, there was the implication that Putin might have Parkinson's disease and be preparing to evacuate his post because of this. The Sun, which isn't The Sun a little bit like a Daily Mail kind of situation? Like, yeah. So they're, you know, not the most trustworthy of sources, but we continue. The Sun also quoted a 2015 study from the Department of Neurology at Radboud University Medical Center in the Netherlands, which highlighted perceived signs of Putin's walk, his gait, the way he moved, indicating Parkinson's. This is sort of like, you know, a visual diagnosis, right? Which we know that's problematic. The researchers pointed out that the 68, by the way, year old Putin, he looks fantastic.
He looks good, man.
Ripped.
Can't hate.
Remember those pictures of him riding shirtless on a horse? Mm-hmm. That was like not that long ago.
Well, you know, just to pause here, he's 68 years old. Just really compare that to the way current President Trump looks. Compare Vladimir Putin to the way even the incumbent president Joe Biden looks at 70-ish. Are they both 70-ish? I know they're in their 70s, and this guy is only a few years younger. And he looks still like he's, I don't know, like a man of action that could go out on the field somewhere and take care of business.
Joe Biden is 78 years old, by the way.
78?
You know what? No, he's not. He's 70. Yeah, he is. He's 78 now as of today, November 20th, as we record.
Today's Joe Biden's birthday?
Today is his birthday.
Wow. So he will be, sorry to sidetrack, with the oldest president.
That's correct.
In history. Putin, I have a theory about why Putin looks so good. Because the man don't give a f*** and doesn't need to and hasn't for a very, very long time.
I would say he gives a great many f***s, but they may not be the f***s that other people give.
What I'm saying is he is bulletproof. He is so, like, he waves his hand and things happen. He's not worried. You know, that's all I'm saying. I think worry is what makes you old, and, you know, criticism and being, you know, like, but Russian media, I mean, I don't know. He's so in control of everything that he does and of his country that I just don't think, I think he's impervious to that stuff. Just a theory.
I think,
anyway,
I think he also has a team of, like, you know, there's the MCU transformation, Marvel Cinematic Universe transformation is famous for making people, like, ripped and in really good health. And that's why, you know, you see a lot of well-to-do people are going to be in better shape often, not all the time, but wealthy people are often going to be in better shape because of the access they have, not just to medical care, but to personal trainers and expertise. Putin has just applied himself and used that personal discipline as well as probably an army of people monitoring his physical health. You know what I mean? It's not like he is cutting out time in meetings himself to do a couple. What's a silly exercise? Plank. It's not like he's like, okay, let's pause the call. I'm going to plank for my health. You know what I mean?
They always find Putin planking various parts of the Kremlin. He's just like on a bookshelf, you know, like that episode of The Office. But back to the study, they called this thing that he had, this particular style of walking or what have you. They pointed to that as a symptom of potentially his Parkinson's, but very quickly it came out that this could be, Ben, I love that you found this. I don't know if you knew about this already. A gunslinger's walk, with, I think we can all picture what that is, you know, with the kind of a wide stance, and you got your hands pinned down to your sides, you know, to keep your guns close to you in case you need to whip them out real quick and get into a firefight in a saloon or something. But yeah, that is a thing that KGB agents are trained to do, to keep their weapons tightly pinned to their left hand side.
And his left arm wasn't moving when it was.
Yeah, that's
his
video. So yeah, it was either he's lost some mobility in that left arm, or he's just ready.
He's strapped. He's got,
yeah, he's strapped. He's got he's got some kind of future weapon there, just waiting in case he needs it.
Yeah, that's the idea. And you know, of course, we're not in any way mocking serious medical conditions. It's just this is the kind of speculation that happens when a person lives their life in a black box. There's a ton of stuff we do not know about this guy. And when I say we, I mean like other intelligence agencies don't know some stuff about him. The Kremlin responded to this speculation, and they were pretty explicit. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said, "This is absolute nonsense. Everything is fine with the president. He's in excellent health, etc." And to be fair, the guy we mentioned, the professor, Solovey, may not be the best source. He's one of those, he's a pundit, he's a political commentator, but he said weird stuff in the past, and he's also been wrong in the past.
Yeah, didn't he said he was a part of some Illuminati-type thing, right?
Mm.
This is the guy.
Mm-hmm. That's him. So, yeah. A powerful secret organization. He also said there would be no Western sanctions over the war in Ukraine in 2015. That was wrong. And in 2016, he said Putin's going to be leaving office very soon. History has shown that was also incorrect, depending on how you define very soon. Just be clear.
Wow. Before we jump off the Parkinson's thing, I just want to give a nod to Michael J. Fox. I don't know if anybody else saw this, but he's officially ending his career by his own choice because he, you know, of complications to the disease. And, you know, it isn't, we talk about this all the time, but it's not, we're certainly not trying to make light of that in any way. We've already stated that in this episode, but just a shout out to him for being awesome.
Yeah. There's a great NPR interview with him that I would recommend if anybody wants to check out. His reasoning behind it, as well as some of the philanthropic work that he is doing and planning to focus on in the future post-acting career.
And I do want to point out too that he was in a great episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm where he, you know, sort of makes light of his condition in a very like owning it way, which I appreciate it. You know, like it becomes a plot point in the show, like in typical Curb fashion. But I thought it was interesting that he, you know, used a real life condition and obviously a very difficult thing to be going through, and made it into something that could make people, you know, smile.
And he's done multiple. He's done that with multiple media appearances or appearances on other shows. You know, playing himself on air and acknowledging this. So, going back to, we ended up at Michael J. Fox, but we were talking about possible medical scares for the president of Russia. There's a less dire possibility. Could Vladimir Putin, after decades as one of the world's most powerful people, just want to kick back? You know what I mean? Like prop up his feet by the shores of the Baltic and live the good life? You know, does he just want to buy the farm? Maybe, because he is older. He is 68 years old. But as you could imagine, he has a lot of enemies, both foreign and domestic. And unless he had protections in place, he could become a huge target. He will become a huge target for activists, for opposition parties, other oligarchs that he has waged hidden war on in the past. Or even think about this, prosecutors who are just corrupt, who don't care what the actual crimes are. They just want to shake down this guy. It's an enormously dangerous gamble, but potentially it could be a gold mine, because do you know how wealthy Vladimir Putin is? The answer is no, unless you're Vladimir Putin. This guy has so much money and has so much control over so many different things that no one knows how much cash he actually has. Like, we don't know. His wealth is ... And you can see some you can see some stats that gather, like the estimates. You'll see someone saying that he's worth $200 billion. Someone saying that it, conservatively, it's more like $70 billion. It's tough. There's one quote that I think was really weird. A Russian banker who is now living in exile called Sergei Pugachev one time said that, quote, any attempt to calculate Putin's net worth won't succeed. He is the richest person in the world until he leaves power. It's wild.
Yeah, it really is wild. Maybe it's just that concept of, in many ways, when you're the head of a state, you kind of have unlimited power to print money.
Yeah.
That's odd, though. But it's not just the money, right? I mean, power comes in many forms. And you've probably heard of this before. Forbes magazine, or was once just Forbes magazine, but Forbes, the entity, it in 2018 considered Vladimir Putin to be one of the most powerful people on the planet. There were the top two, ready? Xi Jinping, who is, I think, general secretary. I forget the exact title that he holds, but
I think it's big dog
of China. that was the number one, and then Vladimir Putin was number two on the list.
General secretary, sorry, I feel bad.
Okay, general secretary, big dog.
I'm thinking of, you guys remember those t-shirts, like the big dog t-shirts?
Oh yeah,
they were the no fear
with the cartoon. Ooh. Yeah, the cartoon women, like, with the large breasts. Well, that was something else. That was Big Bubba
or Big Johnson.
Big Johnson. Excuse me.
I thought those were brilliant. What incisive commentary I had wearing those shirts.
It was a golden time for novelty t-shirts.
It was. We need more novelty t-shirts. Check out our TeePublic store. So you're right. Power, how is it defined? It is a multidimensional thing, right? And it exists in many different spheres. But some things remain true regardless of the times. You know, we opened with some statements about kings, heavy as the head and so on. There's another statement about kings, which is this. If you shoot at the king, don't miss. You know what I mean? Not to be too Eminem or Hamilton about it. It's a one-shot situation.
Yes, for sure. Don't aim in the king and miss, or you will find polonium or maybe just, you know, some other kind of pesticide in your water. I'm going to drink this. Let's go to a break. We'll be right back.
And we're back. We have not mysteriously fallen out of any third story windows, which is pretty cool. It's good to see everybody. We have to talk about danger. There's another aspect. What if the current president of Russia is somehow afraid? You don't have to be a weatherman to know which way the wind blows. So what if he feels an ill wind on the way? There's a guy who's a professor at the Center for Russian and Central Asian and East European Studies at Jawaharlal Nehru University. His name is Sanjay Kumar Pandey. And Pandey studies this stuff all the time. He initially was ignoring rumors about medical concerns, not because he thought it was just some anti-Russian spin, but because he thought Putin himself had planted this fake news to gauge public reaction and see if he had supporters. But when he saw this new legislation coming in, he said, okay, we can't just call this a conspiracy. Something is definitely wrong. Something is rotten in Moscow. We just don't know what. So he thinks maybe Putin is afraid of losing the next election in 2024.
Yeah, well, and this is good stuff. We're going to talk about the details of this. Before we get into it too deeply, I just want to point out that the BBC and a couple other places that in the West have been reporting on the effect that the coronavirus and COVID-19 have had on leaders across the world. And this situation has certainly negatively affected the public view of Vladimir Putin within Russia. And this is West reporting. So who knows if, you know, how much truth there is to that, but it does seem like approval ratings are down. He's got the lowest approval rating right now that he's had in his entire career as a politician. So just let's like make sure that is sitting there in our knowledge before we jump into Sanjay Kumar Pandey's ideas.
Yeah. And he thinks that's a very good point because COVID has affected everything. So Pandey also thinks that seeing the situation in Belarus may have affected Putin's calculus. He said, you know, to paraphrase, he's like, look at the demonstrations that Lukashenko, the dictator of Belarus, was facing. He knows that if he tried to put in this law, like in 2024, in election year, then there would be a lot of criticism, a lot of protesting, which means a lot of government crackdowns. So he's maybe trying to just get in front of this and do it in advance. The opposition leaders, one of whom would be Gennady Gudkov, say that Putin probably already agreed to leave, like behind the scenes. And this is, you know, this is building the parachute before you jump out of the plane. And this guy also says, to your point, Matt, something interesting. He said Putin has been behaving strangely since the beginning of the pandemic, and he's become much worse at speaking. And to sew this up, as we mentioned before, when we're talking about this on a strange news segment, these things do not occur in a vacuum. These bills became public knowledge while there was an incredibly divisive U.S. election. And you have to wonder whether the possibility of a different U.S. administration might have in some way pushed Putin to pull the trigger now.
Absolutely. And combine that with these COVID restrictions where in Russia, I think currently, and as these bills are being talked about and passed through their parliament, or the Duma, citizens can't gather in large numbers to protest any of this because of the restrictions. Like, how crazy is that? It doesn't matter if you support Putin or not, or the current government. There's nothing you could do about it to show. I mean, there's a lot to unpack there. But I think that's another piece of the strategy.
Very smart, astute, Matt. I like it. You may have you may well be in the running to be the next Russian president with a sharp mind like that. We just have to get over the fact that you're from the U.S.
Well, forge a couple documents. We'll be fine.
You do a pretty sweet Russian accent, if I'm not mistaken.
I don't know what that is.
Okay, but, fair enough. Yeah. My bad. I'm thinking of someone else.
Matt's method. Okay. He doesn't do characters and accents. He becomes.
Yes.
So yeah, you're right. That's a really good point. There's another thing that popped up that I think maybe a little Pepe Silvia to connect these, but they occurred around the same time, which is that Edward Snowden received permanent Russian citizenship. He's been living there since 2013. Initially, he was granted asylum. He fled the United States after leaking information on U.S. intelligence agencies' just incredibly insidious and successful methods of electronic surveillance and how they were eavesdropping on everybody, including other countries, and breaking several laws. In October, just last month as we record this, he was given permanent Russian residency. And recently, this month, he announced plans for he and his spouse to apply for full Russian citizenship. So he's not leaving.
Well, and it's really interesting because Snowden himself, like the whistleblower and activist now, he was playing chess, right? Now, like, there's no doubt he was making moves there. And you have to think that eventually he figured he was just going to make this move to stay in Russia and to get citizenship, essentially. But you also have to wonder if, like, Russia itself and Vladimir Putin, who again has been in power since all of that has begun to occur in, 2013, we said, is Snowden a chess piece that is being played by Russia? Right. By keeping him there. And like, what other information did he really release all the information? There's so much speculation to be done there. And it is speculation. Have no doubt. But it is fascinating to think about.
Yeah. And there's another consideration afoot. Look, we're saying some offhand things, but we are referring to true events. When we talk about poison and so on, there is no secret that the Putin administration has made a name for itself based on some pretty brutal classic Cold War power moves. We're talking about poisoning journalists and dissidents, rigging elections, putting your opponents just in jail for the heck of it, shutting down the media. The list goes on and on and on, and then cracking down on oligarchs, even if you used to get along with them, if they don't toe the line. Like, the one of my favorite examples, feels weird to call this a favorite example, but there is proof, there is hard evidence of Vladimir Putin's personal involvement in the assassination of his leading opponent in 2015, former Deputy Prime Minister Boris Nemtsov. I guess I can't say it's conclusively proven, because it hasn't gone to court, but various institutions, including the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, have witness testimony saying, yeah, I know when and where and how Putin gave the order for that assassination. Like, we can give you the quote. And Russia ignored it. He's literally known for doing this assassination, zero consequences. But that to me, all that means is that whatever the real motivation for this new legislation, this legal conspiracy might be, the problem, whatever it is something that cannot be solved by poison this time. Courts are not perfect, but unlike journalists, they are immune to polonium.
Well, I don't know. When has anyone tested it yet? The entire court gets polonium.
Sounds like a headline. Yeah. Or an Always Sunny episode. So right now the story is ongoing, but we can tell you a little bit about where we're at currently. These proposals, this immune from anything forever, brush your shoulders off if you're a Russian president law, it hasn't passed yet.
Yeah, but I don't know. Like, given his track record, I don't really see any particularly insurmountable roadblocks. Do you, fellas?
Well, it's really all that has to happen is the lower house of parliament has to approve, right?
Right.
And then there are two other votes that have to occur. It has to go, I think it's the upper house, and then reviewed again, and then
signed by the man himself, right?
Yeah. Goes to his office, and he's like, hey, this sounds like a great idea.
Who came up with this? Brilliant. Yeah. But again, those houses of the legislature you're talking about, those are all his people.
Well, it's not all of them, but I mean, certainly the majority, right?
Well, yeah.
They have control.
Yeah. Right. I don't see it not passing. And what a power move. I am now Superman, you know? You cannot touch me, as much as he was that already before. And it's something that I'm sure our current sitting president is keenly interested in. But alas, I do not feel that we have the mechanisms to do such a thing here in the United States.
Yeah, it's incredibly sensitive in the U.S. Any talk of changing the term limits on the presidency is a political no-go right now.
For sure. Hey, but adding people to the Supreme Court, let's do it! Anyway, everything's fine. Everything's okay.
Ring wraiths.
Yeah, exactly.
We have our country has 9 ring wraiths, and they're in charge of everything, and you can't elect them. And they're here forever. It's just that's the best way to explain the Supreme Court to people outside of the U.S. Have you
seen?
So
you can add like other ring wraiths, mm-hmm. other kinder, gentler ring wraiths, potentially, right?
Or more evil ring wraiths. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, like, yeah,
it goes either way.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
I love that idea of just have, like, let's just increase the number of ring wraiths. That sounds good.
Let's expand the franchise, you guys. You know what I mean? What about Duke of the Rings or Lord of the Bracelets, you know?
Oh.
Tolkien estate, get at us. So, yeah, you're right. And, you know, you're bringing up a really good point there, Noel. It's absurd, right? It's absurd to have the idea of this guy signing a bill going, oh, what? Who came up with this? You guys, you shouldn't have. Well, I guess, twist my arm. That's bizarre, and that's maybe not the way government should work. Right as we were going in, we talked about this a little off air, right as we were going in, we learned that a couple days ago, Putin had sparked even more speculation about his health. There was a televised meeting about coronavirus with some top officials. It's like an hour and a half meeting. And he had a coughing fit. And that's totally understandable. People cough, people fart, people sneeze, whatever. They're people. And the thing that they massively, I think, dropped the ball on is when they re-aired the video on the, you know, evening news or later iterations, someone had edited the coughing out of the video, but everyone had already seen it. So take it from us, folks. If you want to start a conspiracy theory, editing a video in an obvious way is a fantastic first step.
Yeah, it really is.
They didn't even edit out Giuliani's makeup mishap. You know, we got to give them credit where that's due.
Makeup or blood, you know?
I was going to say, or in Russia and in Putin's case, you could just edit, you know, photographs of people or just completely take them out of historical photographs.
And Photoshop still never gives Stalin the shout out he deserves from that Photoshop.
Right.
Photoshop. I guess, you know, shouting out Stalin is probably kind of a tone deaf move. A little bit.
Stalin is like the top person credited in the like dev team credits in Photoshop about me, you know, section.
So right now, as we mentioned, Putin is younger than people may imagine. And he certainly looks younger than he is. He's 68 years old. He has no publicly endorsed successor to his presidency. There are protests in multiple Russian cities. As you said, Matt, his numbers in the polls are plummeting. His party is losing some local elections. Even the loyalists in his crew are starting to say, well, what's next? Can we do Putinism without Vladimir Putin? And if we could look inside the cathedral of this man's mind, What does he see in the future? Is this a setup for peaceful transition to power, a reaction to something else, a hidden medical condition? Or is this, as the Kremlin said, fine?
It's all fine. All is fine. We want to know what you think. We know what we think, and we've talked about a lot of it today, but we certainly want to know where your head is at, especially if you are listening to this. Are you listening to this somewhere in Asia, in that region? Or, like, we'd love to just hear what people are thinking and not have it filtered through the BBC or, you know, some other Western outlet as we're getting information. So please, please, please find us on social media. We are Conspiracy Stuff at Facebook and Twitter. On Instagram, we are Conspiracy Stuff Show. You can find us on YouTube. It's youtube.com/conspiracystuff. You can see some of these podcasts and chats on video, us hanging out in our houses with our, djembes and such. And if you don't want to do that, you can always give us a call.
That's right. You can reach us at 1-833-STDWYTK. Leave a message at the sound of Ben's dulcet tone, and then you can tell a story about whatever floats your boat.
What? Ben's face was incredible when you said he had a dulcet tone.
It's just, I'm just making that face. I appreciate it, but my throat's crazy. No COVID. But
good. You can tell us a story about whatever is on your mind. Preferably keep it to 3 minutes and make it about something relating to the show. And then you will, I guarantee, potentially be featured on the show. Just let us know if that's okay and how you want us to refer to you. First name only, anonymous, we're here for it.
And if you don't want to do any of those things, but you'd still love to get into contact with us, we have a good old-fashioned email. It's simple. Here it is.
Conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.